so much for I'm not asking for it. Thank you.
Wednesday, October 4th, Chapter 23, The Empty Book. October 2nd, Chapter 20, Freak the Mighty Strikes Again. October 2nd, Chapter 20, Freak the Mighty Strikes Again. October 2nd, Chapter 20, Freak the Mighty Strikes Again. Even a total goon like me knows you can't stop Killer Kane. But I go ahead and try anyhow. My hands are still numb out and I can hardly walk. So all I can do is sort of fall on top of him and try to shove his arms from her. I'm going. Stop. I see you. I see you, Daddy. Please, please stop. You're killing her. He just twitches me away. He's made of iron and steel. He's gritting his teeth and squeezing her neck. You can see the white in her eyes. You cannot even try to get away anymore. I tried to get between them and I'm going. I saw you kill her. I saw you kill Mom. I never will forget. Not ever. I know I didn't. I know. It's just like I'm trapped underwater or something, so weak and flabbed, I can hardly fight him. Can't pry his eyes loose from my mother's neck, from Loretta's neck, because everything is mixed up and he's going to do the same to Loretta Lee he did to my mom, choking the life out of her. He got the same cold killer look because he wants her to die, like he wanted Mom to die. Nothing else matters except what he wants. I'm there in the dark pushing at him. The lights catch my eyes and I can see her looking at me. She's so far away, it's like I'm 4 years old again, peeking out from behind the bedroom door and then running to bang my little fist at him while the light fades from her eyes. I can't get loose of her. I can't get him loose of her. So all I can do is keep screaming. I know you killed her. I saw you. I saw you did it. You killed her. You killed her and I'll never forget. Never. Finally, he kind of jerked his head and I can feel him looking at me and then his hands are open. Loretta slips away and I can hear her breathing like a broken bird in the cellar door. What, he says, reaching for me. What did you say? I saw you did it. I saw you killed my mother. You were about 4 years old, he says, and now his big hands are starting to curl around her neck, except he's holding me soft. I can feel his heart beating and his cool breath on my face that makes me want to fall asleep. Can't possibly recall this event, he says. You think you can, but you can't. I can, I say, I do. That's the poison they put in your mind, boy. They brainwash you into thinking you can remember. He's pulling me closer, holding me soft by the neck, and now I can feel the pulse of his hands. They never talked about it, I say. They don't have to, because I can't ever forget it, no matter how I try. No, he says, and his face is so close, I can feel the heat rising off him. Impossible, you can't. You were wearing a brown corduroy trousers. I saw, talking as fast as it makes me shake inside, and a black t-shirt with no sleeves. I tried to stop you, and I couldn't. And you carried me back to my room and put me to bed and told me I was just dreaming. You locked me in that room, and I ran to the window and broke it with my hand and started yelling for someone to come help Mommy. My father sighs and says, Lord, I wish you hadn't done that, boy. It cost me years. They caught you, Daddy, and they put you away forever, except then you fooled them and they let you go. I have to clean.
October 4th, Chapter 23, The Empty Book.
It's around my neck. I'm trying to fight him, but I'm so small and weak, and he is so big and strong. You can't stop him. No one can stop Killer Kane. He squeezes and squeezes and squeezes. I'm in a faraway place, falling backwards, real slow and dreamy, when I hear a window breaking. Then a small, faraway voice is saying, put your hands up, villain, and I really am falling, and the air is coming back into my lungs so fast it hurts. I'm lying there all crumped up sideways. I can see Freak. He's rolled down through the cellar window into a pile of coal, and he tries to stand up. I'm warning you, he says in a fierce, bold way. He's got his squirt gun and one of those big bluster models that hold about a gallon of water. Killer Kane is looking at me. He's looking at Loretta, all crumped and moaning. He's looking at Freak. Then he shakes his head and goes, I know a real gun when I see one, you little monster. You make a move reaching out. He makes a move, reaching out. Freak cuddles back into. Freak cuddles back a little way, but he can't really run, and even if he could, there's no place to go. This is your partner in crime, Killer Kane says to me. I guess maybe you are a retard after all. Freak is pointing at the squirt gun right into the face, his face, and says, guess what I got for Christmas, Mr. Kane? Guess right, because your life depends on it. Killer Kane doesn't understand anything. He just reaching out real slow because he knows that Freak can't get away. This Squirt Gun Freak says,
October 4th, Chapter 23, The Empty Book.
Like, who are you kidding? Sophic Asic Freak says, raising up the gun and sign around the barrel. Good old reliable H2SO4. Any oily colorless combustion liquid used in dyes, paints, explosion, and many chemical experiments. Killer Kane says, you're lying, kid. You can't fool me. That's when Freak squeezes the trigger and sprays him right in the eyes. Then Killer Kane is screaming in his high, scared voice. His hands are scrambling at his eyes, and it's like that scream wakes me up. Because the next thing I know, I've got Freak in my arms, and I'm running through the dark for the stairs. Running as fast as I can on feet, and I can't even feel. Go, Freak, he's yelling. He's right behind you. Go. I can't look back, but I feel him. Feel the icy cold breath of him on my back of my neck, and the hands reaching blind to grab me. Then I'm going up the stairs, just flying. The steps are breaking under my feet, and he's howling in a rage behind me. His hands are scrambling at my ankles, and for just a second, he has me. I kick loose, and then we're up on the first step, bursting out of the cellar hole. I can see daylight coming through the boarded up plywood, and I cover Freak with my arms and just dive right through the plywood. Lump. The skylight blinds me, and we're skittering, rolling through the clean, cold snow. Hands are grabbing at me, and I'm fighting to get away. Easy, a voice says. Take it easy, kid. You're okay. Iggy Lee. He's looking down at me with his red eyes, and you can see where he's been chewing on his beard. I'm sitting there in the snow, scrunching up at Iggy and all those cops. This must be a million cops. Freak is laughing like a maniac and say, it worked. He fell for it. Soap and vinegar and curry powder. It works like a charm. I don't understand what he's talking about right then. It's only later I figured there wasn't any real acid in the squirt gun, and it was soap and vinegar and curry powder that made Killer Kane think his eyes was burning up. Killer Kane, who is still rubbing frantic at his eyes, begging for help when they put the handcuffs on him and shoved him into the back of the police van. All I've got room to think about is poor Loretta. That's what I'm telling the cops, and that she's down in the cellar. I'm afraid that no one is listening, but there must be. Because right away they're bringing... out of the cellar, and Iggy is running to her and crying out her name. She's still breathing, everyone says. Then Graham is shoving through the crowd of the cops, and Graham is right behind there. Gwen is there too, and everyone is making a big sloppy fuss, especially Graham, who is hugging me so tight I can't hardly breathe. The fair Gwen is hugging Freak, and she's saying, I told you to stay in that car, didn't I? Freak. He's looking over her shoulder at me, looking over Graham's shoulder, and gives me a thumbs up as she carries me away. Freak the mighty, he says. Freak the mighty strikes again. October 2nd, Chapter 20, Freak the Mighty Strikes Again. October 2nd, Chapter 21, The Accident of Nature.
October 4th, Chapter 23, the Empty Book. October 4th, Chapter 23, the Empty Book. They won't let me visit him the first day, and Graham says I just have to be patient and let the doctors do their business. But I can't stand just sitting around, so I decide to walk over to the hospital, which Graham says is miles and miles. But suit yourself. I know how to get there because Freak and I went wandering that way once so he could show me the medical research building. It is not the same though with our Freak along to turn the houses into castles and the swimming pools into moats. All I kept thinking is, what a yuck it is to have to go to the hospital on your birthday. Finally, I got there and I see Fair Gwen's car in the visitor's parking lot. But Grim says I should leave her alone and let her tend to her son. So what I do is go around back to the medical research building to find that stupid little tree I can set under. I have that old ophthalmometer bird with me, and I'm winding it up and flying it around, figuring maybe Freak will get a chance to look out the window and see me flickering by. That's my plan. I'm under that punky little tree messing with the bird until this guy's mowing the lawn makes me move. So I wander around in front of the hospital, and that's where Fair Gwen finds me. Maxwell, she says. She gives me this great big hug, a wet hug, because she's been crying. Max, we have been looking all over for you. Kevin wants to see you. He's making quite a fuss about it, and Dr. Speckwin says it's okay, but just for a few minutes. So the Fair Gwen takes me inside, and I figure we're headed to the medical research building. But instead, we go into the regular hospital. He is in the ICU, she says. So they are taking really good care of him. They are doing their best, Max, she says. The intensive care unit is a place where there are so many nurses you can hardly turn around without bumping into one, which I do as soon as we get there. Every patient gets a room alone, and there's all this electronic gear, the fair Gwen says, is called telemetry. Which means when Freaks sneezes, the nurse knows all about it before he wipes his nose. I'm not scared at all until I actually go into the room and see how small he looks on the bed. They got him setting up with all these tubes going into his arm and up his nose. And Dr. Sparkin is guarding him. She won't let him come too close. I thought no visitors were the best policy for him, she says. But what Kevin wants, Kevin gets. Dr. Sparkin is this small woman with sort of red hair and a real staring face. And it's like she's mad because Freak wants to see me or because I'll break some of her precious equipment. That will be all, Freak says to her. You are dismissed. The thing is, his voice sounds funny, not just faint and weak, but kind of whistly. Only when I get closer do I see he's got this weird looking plastic button stuck on his neck. It is called a trach, he says, holding his finger across the button, which stops the whistling noise. Standard procedure to facilitate breathing. Does it hurt? No way, he says. I think it's cool. Listen to this. Then he plays with his fingers against the button, making the throat whistle a tune, which he says is the theme from Star Trek, although you can hardly recognize it. So when do you come home, I ask. Freak can't move much this way. They've got him set up in the bed, so he sort of shakes his eyes instead of his head. I'm not coming home, he says, not in my present manifestation. I go. What? The bionic unit. The bionic unit is on red alert, he says. Tonight they'll take me down there for my special operation. And the next time you see me, I'll be new and improved. I'm scared, I say. Don't be a moron, he says. You're not the only one having surgery. I still wish they wouldn't. Don't argue with me, he says. I have to lean close to hear him because his voice is so soft and whispering. He goes, if you argue with me, I'll get upset and then they can tell on the telemetry. Then you'll get in trouble. So I just stand there like a lump and don't say anything for a while. I put the onthometer on the foot of the bed, but I don't think he notices it. See that book on the table, he asks. You can't point, but I see the book on the table. Open it, he says. The book reminds me of the dictionary he gave me for Christmas, except when I open it, all the pages are blank. That's for you, he says. I want you to fill it up with our adventures. Write it down, dummy. I was going to do it, but now it looks like I'm busy getting used to my new bionic body. I'll probably take me weeks just learning how to walk with long legs. I put the book down. You're the one with the brains, I say. I'm the long legs. Don't get me upset, he warned. I won't have time, so you'll have to do it. Just write it all down like you're talking. Put it all in fun and cool things we did. Our adventures. But you know, I can't write, Kevin. It's all in your head, Max. Everything you can remember. Just tell the story of Freak the Mighty. No big deal. I pick the book back up, but I don't say anything more about how hopeless it is. Me trying to write stuff down because I don't want to get off the telemetry. He does that himself about a minute later when he starts to cough, and before I can say anything, a room is swarming with nurses. Telling me I have to leave. Out this second, young man, let us do our jobs. They let me wait outside in the ICU with the fair Gwen, who is just standing there at the window, winding her hands and not saying anything. And finally they come back and say, he's okay. It was just a bad spell that they have, and they have him stabilized. A while later, Graham comes into the hospital and she drives me home. Nobody talks much about it at supper that night, except when Graham opens his big mouth and says, poor Gwen, looks like she's in terrible pain. I go, poor Gwen. She's not the one having the special operation. Grim and Graham just look at each other like they can't believe I'm so dumb. And finally Graham says, Maxwell, dear, make an effort to eat your vegetables. That night I put the empty book into the pyramid box for safekeeping for a good and for a good and for good luck. The end of chapter 23.
Now sleep tight and don't let the bed bugs bite. Grim means well, I know that, but sometimes he says the numbest things because it's growing up that worries me. The end of chapter 21. Dr. Sparkquint says, my unique status is as marvel of genetic operation makes me an object of intense curiosity. He says in that lofty way of his. Specialists from the world over are familiar with my case. What about the secret operation, I asked, when the fair Gwen can't hear us? No one, the one where you get a robot body. Freak gets this very cool, significant look on his face and always says the same thing. The bionic research continues, my friend. The work goes on. I don't know why I keep asking, because it gives me the creeps. You think I'd be as cool as Freak about the idea, but it's him that's getting me, that's going to get a new bionic body. But just October 2nd, Chapter 21, The Accident of Nature. We all of us had to go down to the police station, of course, where we took a bunch of pictures of the bruises of my neck, and then they insisted I need an x-ray, so we all had to go over to the hospital and get that done, and then go back to the police station again, which wore on my nerves almost as much as being kidnapped. Brim, the second time we had to go to the cops, he's sitting there in this room with me waiting, and he says, I can't tell you what it felt like coming up out of the basement, seeing that double track of footprints in the snow. I knew it was him. I just knew in my heart. I kept insisting that Graham go home, which she finally did, because we were there at the police station for hours. Me telling all about it over and over and over until I thought I would faint dead away. And just one person asked me what happened after I woke up in the dark, was stolen from my bed. Grim just keep on patting me on the arm and saying, this is important, Max. Maybe this time they'll lock him up for good. That's what everyone keeps saying. They got Killer Kane where they want him, in violation of probation, in violation of a restraining order, abduction of a minor, and two counts of attempted murder. Me and the heroic bike babe, which is what the papers took to calling Loretta Lee. The word is she's hurt pretty bad because she's cracked a bone in her neck. But she's really okay in the long run. Iggy, when I saw him that time in the hospital waiting, he was chewing a hole right through his beard, he was so weird, and it made me think he wasn't such a bad dude after all. It all goes to show, like Grimm says, that you can't always judge a book by the cover. It turns out to be a pretty weird Christmas vacation, as you might imagine. Graham keeps fussing at me and won't let me sleep in the cellar. I don't care if it's under lock and key, she says. Graham, he says, please humor the lady. She's weird to death, and so I sleep upstairs on the fold-out, and at night Graham keeps checking to see if I'm there, which is a pain, but she can't help herself, and anyhow, I'm just as glad not to be alone in the down-under. Freak! Well, fair Gwen just about to throw a fit when she got him home because of his disobeying direct orders and sneaking away to rescue me. But after a while, she calms down and all she does is look at me and shake her head. "What am I going to do with you?" she says. "Put me up for adoption," he says. "I want to go live with the Waltons." He means a TV show that keeps repeating, and of course he's teasing her. But the fair Gwen is not amused. No more crazy adventures or dangerous quests, young man. You have to be very careful, she keeps saying, extra careful. She means the trouble he's had sometimes catching his breath because of the way his insides keeps growing faster than his outside, which hasn't really grown at all. Freak goes into the medical research place every few months, which he says is a real pain, not that it actually hurts. Dr. Sparkle says my unique status as a marvel of generic aberration makes me an object of intense curiosity. He says it is the law way of this. He says in that lofty way of his, specialists for the world over are familiar with my case. What about the secret operation? I ask when Fair Gwen can hear us. The one where you get an bionic body. Freak gets this very cool, significant, scientific look on his face, and he always says the same thing. The bionic research continues, my friend. The work goes on. I don't know why I keep asking, because it gives me the creeps. You'd think I had to be as cool as Freak about the idea, because it's him that's going to get the new bionic body. But just think about it makes me want to jump up and run around. I keep telling Graham that when Freak is in the hospital for the test, I shouldn't have to go to school because we're like a team, but she won't buy it. I know Kevin has been a great help to you, she says, but you got a brain of your own, haven't you, dear? Yep. Right. The only thing about school is that's different after school vacation is how jealous everyone is that we got our pictures in the newspaper and on the TV. Miss Dorland, the English calls us a dynamic duel, and she puts a cutout picture from the newspaper on the bulletin board. Won't you know some goon would put mustache on us the very first day? Freak says he looks cool with a mustache and he can't wait to grow one. And he makes Miss Dolan leave the picture up. Me, I just as soon forget about the whole thing. I really hate the idea of having to testify at the trial and tell what really happened. But everyone says I have to. Alpha want to have him locked up for the rest of his life, which I do, especially after what he tried to do to poor Loretta, who's only trying to help. They can't make me do it if I don't want to, Freak says. His son doesn't have to testify against his father. Grim thinks it will do me good. Plus, he's really worried he'll get off again or fool the jury by quoting from the Bible. Grim worries too much, Freak says. Everybody worries too much. The way it finally turns out with Killer Kane, Freak is right, because just before the trial is supposed to start, I got my fingernails chewed down to the second knuckles. Grim gets the telephone call and makes his punch, his fist in the air, and goes, "Yes, yes. What happened?" They made a deal, and Killer Kane pleaded guilty, which means he has to serve out the rest of his original sentence plus 10 years more. "He'll be an old man when he gets out," Grim says. "He'll be older than me. That should make me happy, but instead I feel really weird and wary." And Grim, who still thinks he knows everything, says, "I have to get used to the idea. The man is an accident of nature," he says. "All you got from him is your looks and your size. You got your mother's heart, and that's what counts." That weird thing I keep thinking about. What if something happens when I get old and I turn out to be another accident nature? Grim sees me thinking about that one night just before bed, and he sits on the end of the folder and he says, Things will make a lot more sense when you finish growing up, Maxwell. Now sleep tight and don't let the bed bugs bite." Grim means well, I know that, but sometimes he says the numbest things because it's growing up that wearies me. That ends the chapter 21. No, the button, both buttons go down. Uh-huh. I don't know what's the matter. No. Yeah, the both buttons went down. Yeah. October.
October the 4th, chapter 22. Remembering Jess, an invention of the mind. "Spring has sprung," Freak says, "and so are we. This is the day school gets out and we're taking a long way home. But now I've been carrying him around on my shoulder for almost a year. We call it walking high, and even if we haven't been going on a dangerous quest lately, so the fair Gwen won't have to throw a fit. Freak
hasn't actually given up on slaying dragons. The world's really true green all over, he said. Do you remember what it used to be like in the Stone Age when the glaciers covered the earth with a saber-toothed tiger roared the frozen night? Oh, no, I said. How can I remember that? I wasn't even born. Don't be a pinhead, he says, remembering is just an invention of the mind. I go, what that's supposed to mean? It means that if you want to, you can remember anything, whether it happened or not. Like, I can remember what it was like in the Ice Age. I kept trying to invent stuff, the wheel, central heating, indoor plumbing, but the Netherlands were happy just the campfire and a fair coat. If I guess the freak had been reading a book about Stone Age, you're right. He's been seeing a saber-toothed tiger behind every bush, except not so far. All of them have turned out to be stray cats. And once it was a skunk, and it was good thing it had ran fast. We had to soak in tomato juice, which is the only way to get rid of stink. Invent electricity would be tough, he says, without copper wire and magnets, but I could handle inventing a compass. All you have to do is to rub the needle, and that way everybody can head south and get away from the glaciers. First you need to invent a time machine, I say, so you can go back there and give all the cavemen a hard time about indoor plumbing. Freak goes, you don't need a time machine if you know how to remember. Which is something I always remember. Him saying that we are trying to figure it out. Freak's birthday is in a couple of days after school gets out. And Gwen has already made it clear he's not getting a ride on the space shuttle. 13 is supposed to be a special he says. At least you could do get my name on the list, or how about the Alia Accurator, just a small one so I can split a few atoms. Fair Gwen goes, I suppose that means you're going to be a obnoxious teenager. The deal is, this is really two birthdays for the price of one, because Freak the Mighty is almost a year old. Talk about propaganda, Freak says. 1 year old and already he's on his way to ninth grade. Fairgren just rolls her eyes when she talks about that. Freak says you can't expect her to understand because you can't really get what it means to be Freak the Mighty unless you are Freak the Mighty. Anyhow, the party is just a family affair because Freak isn't supposed to be overexcited. Which is like saying the moon isn't supposed to go around the earth. Last year I got an orthopter, he says. This year, why not a helicopter, a real one? You can't expect a teenager to play with toys. Why not a jet plane, the fair Gwen says. Cool, Freak says. a Learjet. What he really is getting. I have been sworn to secrecy in this new computer. The one he's been dwelling over is a computer magazine, which means if he has to stay home for a reason, he can go to school over the telephone. The idea, I'll be there in the classroom with a matching computer. The only problem I don't know squit about computers. You'll learn, what Fairgrant says. Kevin will teach you. But why not? Why would you have to stay home? I asked her. We're out in the kitchen, and she and Graham are frosting the cakes, and Freak is hanging out in the living room, acting like he intends to have a party every day for the rest of his life. Maybe he won't have to stay home, Fair Gwen says. And she and Graham kind of look eyeball for a second. Lock eyeballs for a second. The secret code that mothers have. This is just the case, Max. I think maybe you already guessed about the computer, I say. That's why he's jerking your chain about the space capsule ride. I'm not surprised, said Fair Gwen. You can't keep anything from Kevin. Freak hardly touches his dinner. He says he's saving his appetite for the cake. And finally we're done eating except for Graham, who keeps rubbing his belly and rolling his eyes and telling Fair Gwen what a genius she is with the fresh peas, new tomatoes, and salmon. And he'll just have to smudge it more, thanks. Until finally Graham clears his throat and smiles, and Grim has to apologize for being such a pig. The funny thing is, at last they do bring out the cake. Freak asked me to flame out the candles, which makes the wish, and then he doesn't even touch his piece. It's just sort of pushes it around the plate. I figure he's so excited about getting a new computer that he's lost his appetite. Not that he's letting on doesn't feel good. He's acting just as wise and smart mouth as ever. I suppose he's asked for earphones, he says. When we're done singing happy birthday, we better check the glassware for cracks. Hush up, Fair Gwen says, or we'll give you another course. When she brings out the computer, he acts so surprised and happy, maybe he's really surprised. Right away, he wants to turn it on and shut off what a brain he has. And because it is his birthday, he will have to sit there and admire him and go, amazing, fantastic, and Kevin, how did you know that, and so on. He's showing Grim how to play 3D chess. And just matching makes me dizzy. So after a while, I go out of the kitchen and help clean up, which is something I'm good at. Maxwell never breaks a dish, Graham is saying. He's very sure-handed for someone so large. We're almost done putting stuff away and wiping the counter when Grim shouts from the other room. All he says is, "Kevin!" But we can tell right away that there's something wrong. We run in and Freak is leaning back in his chair making the wheezing sound, panting real fast, and his eyelids are fluttering. He's having a seizure, Grim says. Call an ambulance. Farrah Gwynn is already on the phone. I run out in the street and start waving my arm and jumping up and down so they know where to stop. I keep running back in the house to check. One thing, but Farrah Gwynn says there's nothing we can do except wait. End of chapter 22.
Rolling through the clean, cold snow. Hands are grabbing at me. I'm fighting to get away. Easy, a voice says. Take it easy, kid. You're okay. Iggy Lee, he's looking down at me and with his red eyes, and you see where he's been chewing at his beard. I'm sitting there in the snow, squinching up at Iggy and all the old cops. They must have been a million cops, and Freak is laughing like a maniac and saying, "It worked. I fell for it. I fell for it. Soap and vinegar and curry powder. It worked like a charm." I don't understand what he's talking about right then. It's only later I figured there wasn't any real acid in the squirt gun, and it was soap and water, vinegar, and curry powder that made Killer Kane think his eyes were burning up. Killer Kane, who is still rubbing Frank at his eyes and beginning to help when they put on for help, beginning for help. Killer Kane is still rubbing frantic at his eyes and begging for help when they put the handcuffs on him and shoved him into the back of the police van. All I've got room to think about is poor Loretta. That's what I'm telling the cops. That she's down there in the cellar. I'm afraid that no one is listening, but they must. Because right away they're bringing her up out of the cellar and Iggy is running to her and crying out her name. She's still breathing, everybody says. Then Graham is shoving through the crowd of the cops and Grim is right behind him and Gwen is there too. Everybody is making a big sloppy fuss, especially Graham, who's hugging me so tight I can hardly breathe. Farrah Gwynn is hugging Freak and she's saying, "I told you to stay in the car, didn't I? Freak is looking over her shoulder at me, looking over Graham's shoulder, and he gives me a thumbs up as she carries me away. "Freak the Mighty," he says. "Freak the Mighty, strike the..." Chapter 21, The Accident of Nature. We all had to go down to the police department, of course. where we took a bunch of pictures of the bruises on my neck. Then instead, I needed a x-ray, and so we had to go over to the hospital and get that done, and then go back to the police department, which wore on my nerves almost as much as being kidnapped. Grim, the second time we go to the cops, he's sitting there in the room with me waiting. And he says, I can't tell you what it felt like coming down out of the basement and seeing you double track, seeing that double track of footprints in the snow. I knew it was him. I just knew it in my heart. He kept insisting that Graham go home, which she finally did, but she was there at the police station for hours and hours. Me telling all about it over and over until I thought I would faint dead away, and just one more person asked me what happened after I woke up in the dark and was stolen from my own bed. Grim, he just kept patting me on my arm and saying, this is important, Max. Maybe this time we'll lock him up. They'll lock him up for good. That's what everyone keeps saying. That time they got Killer Kane where they want him, in violation of probation, violation of a restraining order, abduction of a minor, and 2 counts of attempted murder. He and the heroic biker babe, which is what the papers took to call Loretta Lee. The word is she hurts pretty bad because she cracked a bone in her knee. Neck. But she's okay in the long run. Iggy, when I saw him that time at the hospital waiting, he was chewing a hole right through the beard. Through his beard. And he made me think he wasn't such a bad dude after all. It all goes to show, like Grim says, that you can't always judge a book by its cover. It turns out to be pretty weird Christmas vacation, as we might imagine. As Graham keeps fussing at me and won't let me sleep in the cellar, I don't care if he's on the lock and key, she says. Grim, he says, please humor the lady. She's worried about death. And so sleep upstairs on the fold out. And at night, Graham kept checking to see. I'm there. Which is a pain, but she can't help herself. And somehow just as glad to be alone in the down under. Freak! Well, the fair wind just about threw a fit when she got to his home because of his disobeying or direct order of sneaking away to rescue